I don't want you guys, this is not a physical be strong in the faith, but spiritual. I just don't think I can ever get to that point. He's got a pretty big muscle. Let's look at, by way of introduction, this is Naomi's longest speech in the book. And of course, actually, the focus shifts to Ruth, basically even starting to today, even though Naomi's the one talking. The purpose, it's in their best interest, that's her two daughters-in-law, to return to Moab. That's very clear in the speech. So she's telling them, look, I'm going to make an argument. This is why you need to go back, and it sounds really good. Naomi's theology is right. I praised her last week, and we're going to look at some of her weaknesses today. But I think that right here is a big one. I think that there's an attitude shift that takes place in Naomi. First of all, the writer of Ruth says that basically in verses 15 through 18 that we live by faith. And I want to go back and look at this human reason for a moment. Now notice what Naomi says. Naomi says, turn back, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Have I yet sons in my womb that may become your husbands? We got to remind ourselves here that where they're traveling from, probably in this mountainous region, it depends on, we don't know exactly where they were, but it's roughly 60 miles, and Bethlehem's like right in here. So they've roughly got 60 miles. That's conservative. It could be anywhere to up to 80. It could be, it depending on where they were at, maybe they were in here, it might have been 40 miles. So they've already started the journey back. We saw that last week. They've already started back. And I think the reason that Naomi did that was to get them away on their own so that she could convince them to go back. You don't need to follow me. You don't need, and it makes it easier to say goodbye when you're not in the location that you've spent time with them. So they're on the road back, and she's telling them now, using common sense, I think it's pretty logical. I'm going to do her argument for her in just a minute using some mathematical equations. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure this out, but I can give you an estimate of what I think was happening. Now, notice in verse 12, she says, turn back, my daughters, go your way. I am too old to have a husband. If I should say I have hope, even if I had a husband this night and bear sons, would you therefore wait till they were grown? Okay, they would have probably been 20. Well, we'll do some calculations in just a second. Would you therefore refrain from marrying? No, my daughters, for it is exceedingly bitter. Here's the shift that takes place in Naomi. I think it's clear, and I think it's throughout the rest of this chapter. It is bitter for me for your sake that the hand of the Lord has gone out with me. Now let's look at Naomi's argument. Let's do some math. Let's do some basic math. And I think I'm calculating this low, and most scholars believe that she's a little older than this, but let's just do some basic math. First of all, if Naomi was 15 when she married, and she had her boys by the age of 20, that would make her what, 20, right? Obviously, with two young babies. But let's say the boys got married when they were 15, and I added plus two. This is my own calculation, because you have about a year and a half in between each child. So let's say she gets to the age of 37, because she has to wait that many years for those boys to get old. It's possible the boys were older. And the last one is you have to add 10 years from the time the boys and the husband died. So conservatively, she would be 47 years old. Even with modern technology, 47 years old is getting kind of late in the game to have kids. Even back then, 47 was, whoa. And so it looks logical. It looks like Naomi's giving the girls some good advice. It seems logical. It seems understandable. When you do the math, it looks good. But here's the problem. We walk by faith, not by sight. I love this picture because this shows a person walking into nothingness, and that's what it looks like a lot of times in our Christian lives. We don't see something, and yet God tells us to hold on, and I would never tell you to do something. I think you should reason through things. I think there's logical conclusions that you can come to. But I tell you what, when God called me to preach, and I'm just using myself as an example. Many of you have other examples. I had 8 years to retire. I had a first sergeant who said, "You're crazy to get out." I had a captain, a commander, that told me, "You're crazy to get out. Your career is well established." And on the surface, it would seem that the most illogical thing for me to do would be to separate from the service, to follow God into nothingness, and to go to Bible college and get a degree. That would have seemed illogical. But here again, the issue is that as believers, when God said something, we follow. Now here you have a clear case where Ruth is obviously going to make a decision in just a minute. But now you'll notice here that she's made a great case. I honestly, maybe in my own thoughts and mindset, sounds logical. So we can't really blame, I don't think, the one girl for heading back. But let's look at the choice now. They're living by faith. And by the way, this is interesting because as we go through this, you start to see Naomi kind of fall apart spiritually. She's held it together to this point. And now she's offering these girls a choice. Now let's look at the next verse. "And they lifted up their voices and they wept again." Now that means deep weeping because they do not want to leave her. Ironically, Naomi, at least in my understanding of this text, Naomi believes God has long since departed her. And Ruth now will become a illustration of how God has not abandoned her. So they make a very clear choice. Orpah kissed her mother-in-law and left, basically, but Ruth clung to her. This word clung, dabach, in the Hebrew, it means to fasten oneself to an object. It means literally to lock on. Ruth said, "I've basically heard your logic. I understand your reasoning. I understand that I'm never going to be married to one of your children ever again because the season has passed. But I am going to stick with you." Now, brothers and sisters, that is a picture of the way God sticks with us. Naomi's going to need this because her theology, though proper, her attitude was wrong. It fell apart in the rest of this chapter. That will come out. And Ruth now is a symbol of God's presence with Naomi, even though she doesn't think God is even on her side at the end of this. She's been a good lady to this point. She's held it together, but now you start to see some cracks. All right, there's basically two ways that you can live your Christian life. You can live your life, and by the way, you do make choices in this life. You make choices. Those of you that have heard the gospel week after week from your mother, from your father, from your aunts, your uncles, those of you that have listened to the gospel repeatedly and you choose to not receive it, you have made a choice. Those of you that have heard the gospel, you chose to respond to that gospel, you made a choice. Our lives are all about choices. We sometimes do make good choices and we sometimes make poor choices. I'm not saying throw reason out. I am not saying just take and live carelessly or abandonedly in this life. But what I am saying is this, that when you hear God's voice and you know it's God, you must obey in obedience and by faith and responding to live for Him. And here was a definite choice that these two girls made. And it's all through our lives. We're going to have to make choices. But I can tell you this, the biggest choice you're ever going to make is when God tells you to do something and you don't do it. That's a major choice. I think ultimately, had I told that commander, "You know what? You're right. It does not make sense for me to get out. 8 years to retirement, I was a sergeant, promotable status, could have worked my way up probably to E8, which the highest you can get on the rung is E9. Sounded logical. And you guys know me, I love the military. Did I really want to leave? Uh-uh. But I did. But you know what? If I hadn't left, I'd have missed a lot of blessings. Yeah, I still go back with God every once in a while and say, couldn't you just give me 8 more years? Just let me finish this thing. And there's going to be times in your life when you've got to make a choice. What I'll tell you is this, as your pastor, you look in the Bible, you weigh the good and the bad, and ultimately you follow God. Ruth had learned something from Naomi. Her theology is starting to come out here. All right, let's move on. Not only do we live by faith, but we live with strong convictions. This, when I went through this the first time, I go, wait a minute. Is this Naomi or is this somebody else? Look at this in verse 15. And she said, this is verse 15. We're using this as an illustration of weak convictions. And she said, see, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people, to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law. Really? The god of Moab at that time was Chemosh. Actually, even Solomon got cranked up in it. Solomon built a high place to Chemosh in the abomination of Moab on the mountain east of Jerusalem. So this is right after the book of Ruth, which follows right after. And so Naomi, who in the earlier part of this chapter said, may the Lord bless you, knew that all stuff came from him, wanted to reach out and bless you, and may God take care of you, even in Moab, may do that. Oh, she's gone back to her gods now, and that was okay with her. That was perfectly all right. That doesn't sound like a woman who is steadfastly convinced that God is with her at all times. The God of the covenant, which she does use here. It's in the latter part of this chapter. So here you have a woman who, in the first part of this, you're thinking, man, she's doing great. And then you start to see her unravel. And that's like a lot of us. She said, go back to your gods. Your sister went, now you follow her. Your sister-in-law went back, now you follow her. Now let's look at the strong conviction. Verses 16 through 18. Now, there is within this text, 16 through 18, a structure that's going on. Let me show it to you this way. This is actually a form of poetry, and you find it throughout the Old Testament, very rarely in the New Testament, although the form is used at some point. You're first of all going to see a negative command in 16a and a negative conditional in 17b. Now, I'm going to read those to you. Now, this is the negative command. But Ruth said, do not, negative, urge me to leave you and return from following you. Now, in the latter part of verse 17, you'll see, may the Lord do to me, and more so, if anything but death departs from me. In the Hebrew, this is a negative conditional balanced with a negative command. In other words, she doesn't want to leave. She doesn't want to take off. And she's so convinced that she doesn't want to take off that God can do whatever he wants to her if she breaks that command. Now she does something else. This is so beautiful, guys. You need to watch this. Watch this. She compares life and death. This is for us. I want you to see that. This is for us. Watch this. For where you go, I will go. And where you lodge, I will lodge. 17a, comparing death. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. Ruth must have known and must have learned from Naomi the very nature of God. And I think in my own heart that when Ruth saw how poorly Naomi was dealing with this. One of the reasons that she wanted to stay with her was to help her in her faith, to help push out that faith. And so she was showing Naomi how God will stick with you even though you don't sense His presence. This life, and this, where you go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Where you stay, I will stay. What she's saying to Naomi is, I'm not going to leave you, and neither is God. And so we have to realize in our own hearts and get a real understanding of this, that no matter what happens in this life, no matter what is thrown against us, no matter how bad things get, no matter how rough it looks, God is with you in the midst of that storm. Naomi's very, gotta be absorbing this, because at the end she said, okay, she wasn't going to bother her anymore. Here you have her saying that nothing but death will separate us. And by the way, when you're in Christ, death does not separate you from God. You go to be in His presence. But right sandwiched here in the middle is what I call, see, a sacrificial faith commitment. And she slams it down right in the middle of the verse. For your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. In other words, the Israelites will be my family now, and God will be my family. Some theologians do not see this as a conversion. I do. Probably a conversion had already happened, because she wouldn't be saying this if she didn't already hold it. So here you have Naomi, whose theology was right, but her attitude was wrong. And Naomi had watched her mother-in-law so many years, at least 10 that we can think of. And she's been talking to Naomi about God. She's been learning about God. And she sees her mother-in-law in a real spot. And so Ruth, and I've never seen it this way before until I studied it this week. Ruth really becomes a physical manifestation of God for Naomi. When she was hurting, it's kind of like us. When somebody around us is hurting and they think God has abandoned them, and we show up and we pray with them and we talk with them, we literally become a representative of Christ for them. Obviously, Ruth did have love. This isn't just all about showing the image of God. She did have love for Naomi. But she had listened to Naomi enough to know that the God of the covenant does not break those covenants. He keeps them. There's always a remnant. And I challenge you, go back and look at the Old Testament. There's always been a remnant of Israel all the way through. So here you have this formal structure which reveals great conviction. I love this clip. This is from The Real Mr. Smith Goes to Washington.
I always get a great kick out of that part of the Declaration of Independence. Now, you're not going to have a country that can make these kind of rules work if you haven't got men that have learned to tell human rights from a punch in the nose.
That's good for a headline.
It's a funny thing about men, you know. They all start life being boys. I wouldn't be a bit surprised some of these senators were boys once. And that's why it seemed like a pretty good idea to me to get boys out of crowded cities and stuffy basements for a couple of months out of the year and build their bodies and minds for man-sized job, because those boys are going to be behind these desks some of these days. It seemed like a pretty good idea. Getting boys from all over the country, boys of all nationalities and ways of living, getting them together. Let them find out what makes different people tick the way they do. Because I wouldn't give you 2 cents for all your fancy rules if behind them they didn't have a little bit of plain, ordinary, everyday kindness. And a little looking out for the other fella, too. Pretty important, all that. It's just the blood and bone and sinew of this democracy that some great men handed down to the human race, that's all. But of course, if you've got to build a dam where that boys' camp ought to be to get some graft to pay off some political army or something, well, that's a different thing. Oh, no. If you think I'm going back there and tell those boys in my state and say, look, now, fellas, forget about it. Forget all this stuff I've been telling you about this land you live in is a lot of hoy. This isn't your country. It belongs to a lot of James Taylors. Oh, no, not me. And anybody here that thinks I'm going to do that, they got another thing coming.
Oh. Okay, he wasn't convicted there, right? Did you hear the line when he said, I'm not going to go back and tell those boys that this land they live in is a lie? What Naomi was telling Ruth, that you go back, it's too bitter for me. The God that I worship is basically does not love me, does not care about me. She's trying to undo everything, and Ruth's saying, wait a minute. No. No, that's not the God you told me about, and that's not the God I worship. And you know, so often, I mean, do you have that conviction in your heart? Do you have that he was driven by this boys' camp? It's amazing how we get driven by so many things except God. But do you have that core conviction where you could stand up and say, I don't care what any of you say. I don't care how you think God's not doing it. I'm going to follow him no matter what. We got so many coming up, the next generation coming up behind them. Someday they're going to sit in these halls for sure, but someday they're going to follow our footsteps. And the question is, will they see the conviction and courage that is needed in the Christian life? Ruth looked at Naomi and said, I'm going to be God when you think God is absent. Sometimes we got to carry the ball in our own hearts, in our own lives. And now notice in verse 18, and when Naomi saw that she was determined to go with her, she said no more. She must have been very convinced that Ruth was convinced. We turn a page now. I think probably, and I've been through with Ruth a few times, I think this is a dark moment here coming up. Here you have a proper view of God. Not only do we live by faith and we have strong conviction, that is that God is who he says he is, that he's on the throne, he is in charge. Now notice verse 19. So the two of them, this is after Ruth said, I'm going to stick with you no matter what. So the two of them went on until they came to Bethlehem. And of course, on that map, you remember it was right below Jerusalem. And when they came to Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred. Big theological arguments over that word stirred. Some see it as a big, happy, rejoiceful time. Others see it as an unbelief time. That's the way I see it. I think that's what the word refers to. In other words, the whole town was buzzing. And we'll kind of get the sense of this in a minute. So the whole town was stirred because of them. And the women said, is this Naomi? Not, is this Naomi? It was, is this Naomi? Picture of two women. When Naomi left, she probably looked like this. But she's coming back now in an older condition. I don't know if you caught it, but when I read that chapter, you see the word bitter comes out. Something happened. And I don't want to be too hard on her, but something happened after Elimelech died and her two sons died, even though she had her two daughter-in-laws with her. It seems to me something happened between that event and now. This was not a good picture because they saw Naomi coming back in to town with Ruth. And maybe some of the townspeople said, I can't believe this is the same woman. Let me just say this. Years ago when I was in the pastorate, actually in my first church, and we got damaged, I think pretty severely. There was a period there where I was bitter. I was kind of bitter. And one of the guys in the church said, Pastor, you need to talk to the guy that went before you. I thought I got beat up pretty bad, but his may have been maybe even a little worse. And I talked to him. And boy, I listened to a lot of sermons during that period to try to keep myself afloat. Charles Swindoll was a lifesaver. And I'll never forget what that pastor said. I remember his name, but I'm not going to share it with you. And this pastor said this. He said to me, Pastor, you can use your time to get better, or you can use your time to get bitter. You have to choose. Let me just say this, folks. Do you know bitterness in the heart will eventually destroy you? I have met people that are so bitter, you can see it on their face. Is that what they meant? Is this Naomi? Has she given herself to bitterness so much that it has even tinted the way that she looks? You've seen it, haven't you? People, you've seen it. You know what I'm talking about. People who have let life circumstances beat them and beat them. God is far removed, and they just become bitter. It's like a cancer, folks. Telling you from one that lived there for a little while, life was horrible. And when that pastor said that, it was like a dose of reality to me. I do have to use my time to get better, not bitter. Some of you may be carrying baggage. Let me just say this. Some of you may be carrying baggage from back yonder. I have seen people, even in my own home, not immediate home, family, who have become so bitter at life, they can find nothing positive to say. Everything is negative. Everything is bad. If God exists, why this? If God is this, why this? Why does this happen? Look, folks, I don't have all the answers, but I do know this. No matter what you're going through in your life, what you've been through in your life, submit it to God. Have Him wipe it out so that your bitterness can be gone and that you can get on the road to betterness. Do not let a bitter spirit destroy you. It will eat you like a cancer on the inside and make you old before your time. Is this Naomi? I wonder how many, she had become extremely bitter. She actually, believe this or not, in this text, I went back through and looked and I go, whoa, okay. She levels 4 charges against God. Was this the, may the Lord deal kindly with you? Something happened in the interim, folks. Something happened to Naomi. She got bitter. And you know, if you know somebody like that, it may be a past failure. It may be, look, my dad walked out on me when I was 8 years old. I saw stuff I probably should not have seen as a kid. You can respond to that, and I think by the grace of God, even though I wasn't saved then, I hold no animosity towards my father. I love him. I want him to know Christ. Holly said, you know, to me, Dad, how do you do that? Well, I just choose not to hold on to it. There's people in my family, they've held on to stuff for 55 years, and at the end of their life, when they're supposed to be the most joyful, they are the most sorrowful people I've ever met in my life because they've held on to bitterness. It has ate them like a cancer. Is this Naomi? Is this you? When you get to the end of your life, people are going to go, is that you, really? I mean, I understand there's some physical changes. you go to your class reunion, you'll see that. That's obvious. If they saw me, they'd freak because they used to have hair. But there is a look. You guys know what I'm talking about. There is a look in somebody's eyes when you look at them and you say, that person's bitter. And they grumble and they... Bruh! Don't talk to me. You've seen it. I know it. Is this Naomi? Is this you? Please, guys, don't get rid of bitterness. Just say, God, today I'm just going to give it to you. And sorry I've been this way, and put it down and use that time to get better, not bitter, not like Naomi. Naomi went, and I realize she went through a lot. I'm not discounting that. But Ruth had to say, wait a minute. Wait a minute. I'm going to stick by you. You think God has abandoned you, but he hasn't. I'm going to stick by you. And I'm going to pull you through this. If Ruth was a selfish person, she'd have gone back. She didn't. And she also had listened to her mother-in-law, obviously. It's not stated in the text, obviously. But the theology of Ruth is now coming out, and I think it's the theology of the pre-bitter Naomi. Get rid of bitterness, please. Get happy. And the only way to get happy is to let it go. Give it back to God. Now let's watch this. I almost hit you with the thing. Here's the problem. I think she has a skewed view of God. Even though she started out good, again, I draw that line in the sand. Something happened from the time her last child died to now. And it was a root. Notice, let's look at verses 20 through 22. She said, do not call me Naomi. Do you remember what that meant? Pleasant, happy. And I understand this too, that names were big in the old days. In the Old Testament, names were the very character of a person. Look at what happens. Call me Mara. Happy to bitter. For the Almighty, and that is Sadeh, I think it was a play on it. You notice in your bulletin it says Sadeh. I kind of broke that up for you. Sadeh, which does mean God of the mountain. But I think it's in a mournful sense, has dealt with me bitterly. No. Let me read that again, because I missed it. Do not call me Naomi, call me Mara, for the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. I went away full, and the Lord has brought me back empty. That's a theological mistake too. You don't catch it on first, second, third, fourth, fifth readings. Listen to what she says. I went away full, and the Lord brought me back empty. No, you went away full because the Lord gave you that. You see the slight change here? It's just a subtle change. Her theology, I had this, and God took it away. You catching that? Very slight, but very profound. And the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi when the Lord has testified against me? And the Almighty, and by the way, this is a chasm too. You'll notice it starts with Almighty in verse 20. It goes Lord, Lord in verse 21. And it concludes with Almighty. So that in itself is a chasm where the writer's drawing back a complete loop. He has brought this calamity upon me. So Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabite daughter with her, who returned from the country of Moab, and they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest. Four charges. Here they are. Number one, Yahweh made her life bitter. It was God's fault. Do you ever think that way? It's God's fault. Secondly, Yahweh took my security and my life, verse 21a. Matter of fact, let me just read it to you. I went away full, and the Lord has brought me back empty. How did she go away full? She went away with the husband and two sons, right? But they were given to her. Remember in chapter 1, the verse first, the just before we started this section, she said, God gives you everything, blesses you. There's a shift. Yes, the man was the security in the home. And guess what? If I polled every woman in this church that's had children, you would know this to be true. Your kids are your life. She's telling God, you took my security, my husband, and you took my life. Does this sound like a woman that is happy with God at this point? I never caught this before, really, honestly. I've never caught it before till I got down and really looked at this. Yahweh declared her guilty. And I use Yahweh because that's the word Lord here, obviously. Yahweh declared her guilty. She's guilty. Notice, the Lord has testified against me. That's a legal term. God's got it out for me. Do you ever feel that way? Boy, I know. God really does mess with you a lot. Do you ever feel that way? God's messing with you? Do you see how we just kind of walk down here and you can see how it just gets worse? Now, not only did God cause all this, but now he's finding her guilty. What did she do? Think about it. What did Naomi do? She was a believer. What did Naomi do? She followed her husband. Who should be held accountable for that? The husband. But now she shifts it and says, God's found me guilty for following my husband. And Yahweh, by the way, Yahweh's the one that's afflicting her. Verse 21, the Almighty has brought this calamity upon me. And I think it goes to Naomi's view that she has totally changed her view of God. I think she gets better. And by the way, we're not done. The story's not done. We've still got chapters 2, 3, and 4. But right now in her life, just from what I understand of this text, this woman is a spiritual wreck right now. What if Naomi or Ruth would have left her? You're right. I'm leaving. I think Ruth was spiritual enough to know that Ruth needed her. Or that Ruth needed Naomi, and Naomi needed Ruth to compliment. Something else that's lost in this text too, folks, is this. Ruth really is laying her future on the line with Naomi. Made a very good argument. She's not going to have kids by this lady. This woman's probably not going to have children, at least in the physical sense as we understand it. So Naomi's in pretty bad shape. And then you add this to it, that God's made my life bitter, he's taken my security, my life, he's declared me guilty, and I don't really think she was guilty. I think she did what any wife would have done, and that's follow her husband. If I blame anybody in this case, I blame Elimelech. When I make mistakes in my home and I make the bad choices, I don't blame Audrey. I blame myself. She was just following her husband. By the way, ladies, your husband's the head of the house. I just think she feels this way because her spiritual heart's not right. Let me say this. In order to be spiritually strong in the faith, you have to walk by faith, you have to keep your convictions, and you have to keep a proper view of God. And the proper view of God is this, that God does allow things into your life that will, in fact, cause pain and hardship and trial and frustration, sometimes maybe even anger. But at the end of the day, you have to make a break and say, okay, God is allowing this. Sometimes it could be God, sometimes it's not. God is allowing this. And so I'm going to just trust in God that he's going to work this out. Because if you don't, what happens is you've taken the first step towards bitterness. Don't do that. If you're holding stuff from 1950, please get rid of it. Maybe young or older, and you've become bitter and cynical of God and people, and just let it go. I'm going to tell you something. God loves you. I think God's love, wait a minute, wasn't it demonstrated right there? It was demonstrated there. Paid for your sin in full. Stuff happens. Life happens. But know this, just like Ruth was with Naomi, said, I'm not going to go anywhere till I die, and where you die, I'm going to be buried. God stays with us through that and the next life. Put down your bitterness. Please, don't let it get a foothold in your heart. Father, we thank you again for your word. Father, we thank you for Ruth. What a picture of somebody who understood your very nature and was willing to stick with Naomi. Show her and maybe even reinforce and encourage her.